frighten us by telling us the facts, 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 the facts. We must be the great arsenal of democracy. For us, this is an emergency as serious as war itself. We must apply ourselves to our task with the same resolution, the same sense of urgency, the same spirit of patriotism and sacrifice as we would show were we at war.
For 91.3 FM, WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded on April 28th, 2019, and produced by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Rachel and Nate joined me to talk about the recent successful Stop and Shop workers' strike in New England. That's all coming up on Arsenal for Democracy. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me on the line first from Cambridge is Nate. Hi, Nate.
Hey, Bill.
And also on the line from Boise, Idaho is Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Nate.
We're going to be talking this week about the Stop and Shop strike, which just happened here in New England, where Nate and I are recording. First, before we get into that, just a reminder, we had said on some previous episodes that we were going to be going on a hiatus at the end of May. And for the purposes of WVUD, that is still the case. However, we are currently considering possibly continuing during the summer, quote-unquote, hiatus from the radio station in a podcast form on an interim basis, at least for the summer, probably not the fall. But we want to hear from our listeners. Is that something that you would actually be interested in, us continuing? It would probably be a slightly different format because we would be doing a podcast and not doing a radio show primarily. But we want to hear from you. You can email the show, aftradio@gmail.com. You can tweet at us, aftradio, or I'm at Bill Humphrey, MA. Let us know if you're a regular listener of the show, whether you want to hear the sort of interim podcast during the hiatus. I think we might even do a different episode numbering scheme or something like that during the summer. But just to kind of keep the momentum going for as deep into the year as we can while my other stuff continues. So let us know about that. And with that, let's get into the topic of the Stop and Shop strike, which has now been resolved. This is something that we were internally discussing a lot in the run-up to it. I went to one of the picket lines. There are no Stop and Shop locations in my city except for one that is technically a mini Stop and Shop that is not under the same contract, so that wasn't on strike. But I went to one in Watertown next door and talked to a lot of the workers about that and heard what they had to say. A lot of this, as we'll get into, they really felt like they were not even asking for much in the way of increases to their contract. It was really about preserving what they already had. And we'll talk about some of the specifics of that. The other thing is that, like, in the run-up to this 31,000 workers walking off the job, the parent company in the Netherlands, Ahold Delhaize, for some reason, they decided to increase the shareholder payouts and profits like a few days before this strike popped off, knowing full well that it was potentially in the works. And that seemed to be kind of the final straw that broke the camel's back, was them saying, oh, we can't possibly afford to pay more in labor costs, but somehow we can afford to increase the shareholder payouts. Nate, let's get started on this. Where do we begin on this strike?
I mean, I guess full disclosure, I've worked at Stop and Shop not long enough to join the union or whatever, but you know, so just have some experience there. And I saw a bunch of people out picketing, yeah, so as I was driving around, so they were definitely active, and it seemed like the strike was very successful because sales declined by 75% during the strike and they lost millions. empty shelves everywhere and such. So it seems like most people did not cross the picket line, and there were people out there supporting the strikers, bringing them food. They raised thousands of dollars in like a strike support fund, I believe. So
yeah,
I'd say people were sort of, you know, generally receptive to the strike. So there is sort of that, like, I don't know if it's like the whole don't cross a picket line tradition. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily like encoded here more than other places, but there is some effort to that effect. So
certainly there was a lot of cooperative picketing, where like the Teamsters were refusing to deliver food. I mean, that's a huge thing, right? Eventually the stores ran out of stuff, in most cases. I think a lot of the company had like given autonomy to the managers to decide. So some Stop and Shops were just completely closed. Some of them were running on a skeleton crew. Some of them had a full sort of strikebreaker staff. But it seemed to be, as you said, you know, a huge sort of victory for respecting the picket line. Very few people crossed the picket line when I was on location with some of the strikers. And of the ones that did, obviously there were a few kind of like rich tools who were just like, this doesn't concern me, I don't care. But overwhelmingly, anybody that crossed the picket line was just someone that like did not speak English and really didn't understand what was going on, because there's a large immigrant community here. And even of many of the people who didn't quite understand what was going on, many of them kind of got it when it was explained to them as best we could explain it to them, when they came up to talk to someone on the picket line to find out what was going on. You know, in many cases, they just went somewhere next door. But this ended in a huge victory for all of the unions in the region, representing all these Stop and Shop locations. The deal that was reached, according to Vox, would keep employee health care and retirement benefits intact, which, by the way, a lot of the workers told me the pay was not that good, but the benefits were pretty good. So the proposed cuts to the benefits were really like kind of a huge sticking point for them. And that also seemed to connect with a lot of the folks that would come up and ask what was going on. Like the notion of, oh, we're getting our benefits cut. Like that's horrifying to a lot of people. So keep those benefits intact, provide wage increases instead of just bonuses. And then this is a Massachusetts specific thing, I think. Keep time and a half pay for current employees who work on Sunday. So obviously, legally, there's overtime pay if you're working overtime. But as sort of a Puritan law holdover, working on Sundays, well, obviously, the Puritans themselves didn't allow working on Sundays, but a sort of post-Puritan New England thing was that you got time and a half pay for working on Sundays as if it was like a holiday or overtime or whatever. And this was something that the union was saying needed to be kept in the contract, because that law was taken off the books, at least in Massachusetts. I can't really speak to the other states, what their situation was. There were 240 stores that went on strike, protesting the company's efforts to slash their pay by hiking health insurance premiums and lowering pension benefits for new employees. Stop and Shop is the only major supermarket chain in the Northeast U.S. with a largely unionized workforce. It's owned by the Dutch-based company Ahold Delhaize, which also runs the Giant and Food Lion supermarket brands if you're more toward the mid-Atlantic. So that was sort of the scope of the struggle and the eventual outcome there. Let's talk about, I guess, sort of the reactions to it. Nate, you've been gathering a lot of articles, both pro and con, on this strike, to hear how people are reacting to both the strike itself and also the victory of the union.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seemed like there was some opposition to it, or just like the framing from, like, say, the Herald or whatever, which is to be expected, I would say. There were some interesting stories, like rabbis say it's not kosher to shop at Stop and Shop during the strike,
which is big because it's Passover.
Right, you're right. So Passover, and apparently, I guess Stop and Shop was originally founded by a Boston Jewish family, and a lot of places like it, they get for Passover, you get your matzah meal there, and you know, all your ingredients for your Seder. So I think, but basically, this article just interviews a couple of rabbis in the metro Boston area, and some of them are saying, like, oh, yes, it's not kosher to go. Others are saying, oh, it's up to the individual choice, like, of the person. The Jewish law does not, it can be interpreted in different ways, but we encourage our members to, you know, value the workers' dignity, and so therefore you should support them.
Apparently, there is quite a tradition of Jewish scholars interpreting things, especially in the United States, Jewish scholars interpreting things in a pro-organized labor direction from the standpoint of Jewish law. You know, Jewish socialism, we certainly know there is one prominent Jewish socialist in this country, but that had a very rich tradition, especially in places like New York City, you know, a century ago.
Right. So there was that. And then I did see there was another a quite funny article that I think Rachel has read as well, basically from a PR guy for the Nation's Restaurant News, one of these like niche trade publications or whatever. But basically this guy was saying, yeah, the strike worked and it's not a great look for the Stop and Shop. And now all these presidential candidates might descend on your Shop and Stop as if it's the Iowa State Fair, talking about how Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Klobuchar, Buttigieg, like they all came. I think Bernie tweeted about something like, I think Warren brought Dunkin' Donuts, which of course, you know, it's Boston. So, yeah, basically this is sort of like the inside view, basically saying, yeah, this is not looking great for us. And we probably don't want to have labor agitation because the possible presidential candidates might show up. So brands need to pay attention is how he ends out the article.
Rachel, you wanted to talk about an article on how this was inspiring other labor actions around the New England region, the Connecticut Post article?
Yeah, I think seeing the success of the strike definitely inspires other unions and other labor organizers. The Connecticut Post interviewed a woman named Wanda Howard. She is a member
Steelworkers or something, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Steelworkers. Yeah, she works for the South Central Connecticut Regional Water Authority in New Haven. She's been working on a contract for over a year for her and her fellow workers. And seeing the success of this labor action is definitely, she said it was very encouraging for her because it kind of gave her hope. Like, I think she isn't authorized to strike as a public worker. I don't know what Connecticut's laws are about public members being
not,
able to strike.
Not legal there.
Right. So they have to negotiate their contracts kind of from a weaker position than if they were allowed to strike. But there is definitely public support behind labor. And that's very apparent in how many people supported the United Food and Commercial Workers Union members during their strike. So hopefully she can negotiate a better contract for her job and her fellow workers. This article kind of talked about the factors that go into this kind of greater support for labor. Unemployment in Connecticut and the nation is under 4%, which definitely gives workers more leverage as employers strain to find good people. Apparently, raising wages isn't the first thing they come up with when trying to recruit good employees. While wages are generally up over the last 3 years, they've not risen as much as overall national income, and raises have totaled less for moderately paid people than we might expect in an extended economic boom. The Trump tax cuts didn't really trickle down to the lower working class and lower middle class. So people are kind of angry and agitated about the fact that tax season just passed. Wait a minute, I didn't get as much at my return, or maybe I owe more than I usually have to. And also another factor is the U.S. Supreme Court's Janus decision last June, while cheered by Trump, it allowed unionized public employees to stop paying dues if they so chose, may have backfired. State and municipal employees in Connecticut not only stayed on the dues-paying rolls, they've shown renewed vigor for fighting in places such as Connecticut. In that state, union membership, both public and private sector combined, rose by more than 25% to 268,000 between 2013 and 2018. And a Gallup poll last summer showed a 15-year high in approval of unions at 62%, holding steady for a second year. So I think people have seen in these, especially the public sector strikes, the teacher strikes over the past couple years, have really shown that these workers are just trying to improve their own working conditions, especially for the teachers. They're trying to make classrooms safer and better for their students. And I think that they definitely communicated that well. And during the Stop and Shop strike, I think they also communicated their goals really well and got people on their side.
One of the things that I think we've talked about on previous episodes, especially in surrounding the teacher strike, is that the, you know, many of these unions have sort of been reinvigorated by those national decisions against labor unions because they had atrophied in the past from this sort of like, well, leadership will decide everything. And, you know, we're not going to really engage the members on this. And obviously, even in the run up to this, there were a decade of basically a lot of unions starting to see these sort of grassroots movements within the unions, trying to democratize control of the unions, take on more activist grassroots efforts within the unions so that it wasn't all just top down, ultimately culminating in these things. But things like the Janus decision certainly helped, like, say, hey, look, people are going to leave our unions in droves if we don't engage the membership, so we have to engage them. In this case, you know, of course, we're talking about a private sector union, but they seem to have really done a great job of engaging with their members and getting their members on board with this in a way that led to a very convincing victory. There was a number of articles, great articles that we'll have in our list of links from the Sun Chronicle, and that is a publication that is based here in New England that had some really great coverage of this strike from a local perspective, but also with sort of that national, like, overview perspective, I guess you could call it. One of them was talking about Stop and Shop workers win a public relations war. There was another article that was comparing and contrasting the sort of the other unusual strike that happened in New England recently in the grocery store industry, the Market Basket strike, which that one was a very unusual situation where the workers went on strike in support of the owner of the company who was being ousted because the owner and this sort of family operation had actually treated the workers quite well and given them unusually high salary and benefits packages compared to, you know, competing companies. And they went on strike a number of years ago with extraordinarily high participation by the public respecting those picket lines. You know, and these were typically people who go to those stores are very, very loyal to those stores, which was also something that was true with Stop and Shop. Nate was alluding earlier to, you know, the Jewish customers that have been going there for decades for their, you know, kosher for Passover needs and everything. And that's, you know, just one example. So slightly similar situation in terms of the loyalty base there. And that helps with the maintaining the, you know, the integrity of the picket line and the strength of the strike. In the Market Basket case, they also won that strike and got restored control because the sort of, you know, the more profit-oriented model that was coming in and trying to kick out the leadership of the company, you know, and just extract, you know, the bottom dollar from it as the, you know, as much as possible, they were pushed back on that because the workers weren't willing to take that hit and walked out and got, you know, basically better management. The other thing that this Sun Chronicle article noted was just the national context for this. And they chart kind of that atrophying, that weakness of the labor union movement and this sort of resurgence. So, that, you know, Rachel's giving examples from Connecticut, and that's just part of the picture, right? So nationwide, the number of major work stoppages defined by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics as a strike involving at least 1,000 workers has been in free fall since 1981. That year, the nation recorded 145 major work stoppages affecting 729,000 workers. The next highest was 96 the following year in 1982. Starting in 1947, however, when BLS started keeping records on strike, there was at least 100 major strikes every year through 1981, and it was rare in those years that there were less than 200 major strikes. Since 1981, there have been 50 or more major strikes in a year only five times, and between 2000 and 2018, there have been only 330 major strikes over that entire period, averaging 17 a year. So since the start of the Great Recession, which crippled the nation's economy for years, there were never more than 20 major strikes in a year. But and they also say, you know, at the height of it in 2009, strikes almost disappeared. There was only five that year. But it says that's changed a little since the economy has begun to get better. In February, the BLS said there were 20 major work stoppages in 2018, affecting 487,000 workers. It was the greatest number of strikes since 2007, just before the recession, when there were still only 21. The strikes last year affected the most workers since 1986, when 69 strikes involved 533,000 workers. Some speculate that strikes bumped up last year because of an economy on the rise. Workers may have started to feel left out as companies began to increase profits, which again is what we saw with Stop and Shop, right? They were increasing the profit payouts to shareholders and various other things while trying to say they couldn't possibly sustain the higher labor costs. And the union called their bluff on it. And now that's inspiring other people elsewhere. Nate, you had listened to some podcasts about this, read some other articles about it. What else do we need to know about this strike?
Just an interview with people that worked at Stop and Shop, basically talking about how this is the main reason they were striking is for the future. So like they might have been able to survive on whatever benefit cuts and new contract they were trying to foist on them. But they were saying in order to get people in to Stop and Shop to work there for the future, they need to strike now. So, and you got to be looking ahead, obviously. So it seems like that strategy paid off, I would say. Just in the conversation about all these labor actions and stuff, there was in the Connecticut Post article, there was a quote from a guy, I think a professor at Wesleyan Sociology. And yeah, basically just saying these are precipitous times in the labor movement for renewed activity. Jonathan Cutler, sociology professor and expert on organized labor at Wesleyan, said it's ready to go. You just have to have the spark, essentially a level of confidence, but you have to have a labor movement that is either willing to take the bold step in favor of its membership or organize new members. So I think is what we're seeing. This is happening more and more.
Kind of both too, right? You know, yeah. Both strikes and getting new members in.
Yeah. And he also says, if you're not going to act now, then when on earth were you planning to exercise leverage as a labor movement? And I think that sort of sums it up there, saying like, yeah, I mean, this is the time to do it. So they're going out and do it. So I guess this has been pretty successful, and maybe we'll see more like this in the future.
You know, another thing that happened around here in the region that a lot of people saw was the lockout with the gas company last year. And that was certainly not a fun experience for a lot of people involved. You know, a number of people have commented, you know, strikes and lockouts are not fun. They're kind of really frustrating. A lot of people don't want to do them. But when you need to do them, you need to do them. I found the experience this year was kind of interesting that, on the picket line there with those folks, obviously they were not happy about having to be on strike either. But they were very committed to it. They felt like it was necessary, and they were not happy to be in this position, but felt like it was necessary to do that. And they usually had that tone when they were explaining it to people. If people approached and didn't really know what was going on, they would, you know, it was never like, we're going to stick it to this company or whatever. It was always like, look, like, you know, I really depend on this money coming in, and they're trying to cut it, and we're just trying to get a fair deal here. And that seemed to be really persuasive for a lot of people. There was a lot of, stories that I heard from them, you know, a couple people paying their way through college or even community college, really struggling with the cost of living around here, usually having to live with relatives. There was one guy who I think he held two jobs, and Stop and Shop was one of them. And he said he really enjoyed working at Stop and Shop, and the, you know, the benefits were okay, and it brought in enough money that he could pay for his daughter to go to college, you know, that seemed to be kind of a typical story. There was a lot of camaraderie on this picket line, because a lot of these people really knew each other very well. You know, I think some bigger operations, maybe some folks, it's a little bit harder to, you know, organize for these type of actions, because not everyone knows each other and they're sort of atomized. But a lot of the people, you know, they have a specific area of the store that they work in, and everyone knows everyone else, and they say hi to each other and when they're working in the store, and, you know, catch up on each other's lives and that sort of thing. And so nobody was happy to be there in the broad sense, but there was sort of a good energy and spirit most of the time that I was there, you know, as they were talking to each other and stuff like that. So it was a really interesting experience. Rachel, your final thoughts?
It's really interesting from Idaho, which is a right-to-work state and has been my entire life. It's really encouraging to see these labor actions get the goods, basically, or to slow down the deterioration of these benefits packages. So I'm hoping, I think there's been a state that successfully got rid of their right-to-work status. So I think there might be something there that maybe we can overturn our own right to work status and maybe return power to labor in Idaho as well. So it's just really encouraging to see the sentiments towards labor become more positive.
Nate, overall concluding thoughts on this?
I don't know, beyond like just happiness that this actually worked out for them. I think we talked about in the previous episode about these various technologies that have irked workers, whether it's the sort of the robot there at Stop and Shop.
Oh, yeah,
that
we didn't
cleans
even,
the floors.
Yeah. The cleaning robot that spookily stalks behind you with googly eyes. We didn't really talk about that, but I think there was a great deal of resentment toward the weird robot.
Yeah, like a Roomba is one thing, but this thing has like it's checking you out with the eyes and there's also a lot of auto checkout machines at some of these Stop and Shops, which never seem to work properly when I try to use them, if I ever use them. So basically, there's something to be said like about like a skilled person that rings out your groceries and can fit them in the bag or whatever. That's an actual skill. And I certainly don't have that skill when I'm trying to jam everything.
Yeah, the people, the wizards that get everything into the minimum number of bags safely. That's crazy. How do they do that? Yeah. It's witchcraft.
And like make sure the eggs don't break or whatever. So like that, I mean, if you just have all auto checkout, like then you sort of lose that aspect and like your groceries are falling out on the way to the car or whatever, or just not ideal. And I think this was a factor in the strike. And we're seeing that in other cases as well, where sort of unnecessary technologies basically cost jobs. So,
all right. Well, Nate, thanks for being here to talk about this.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Thanks, Rachel.
And Rachel, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks, Bill. Always a pleasure.
That's all the time we have this week. Tweet us your comments at AFD Radio or email AFDradio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Tuesdays. You can hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Tuesday at noon Eastern. Our theme music was composed for us by Stuntbird. If there are articles or papers discussed in an episode, we usually post links to them on ArsenalForDemocracy.com along with each episode. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message.